Tarzan and My Girl. Well, you've learnt about my obsessions, the outdoors and the animals and the dog and new music and live music. And also running and sport. And we're going to meet some sports stars of the future after the news.
Loving where we live on FM, online and digital radio. This is BBC Surrey.
BBC News at 9 o'clock. I'm Sarah Loudon. A man once considered to be one of the country's best human rights lawyers has been struck off. Phil Shiner brought dozens of cases alleging that British soldiers in Iraq had committed murder and torture. Many of the cases he worked on are now to be re-examined. He admitted paying someone to drum up allegations of abuse. The BBC's Daniel Bircher has more.
Phil Shiner was once regarded as one of the country's best human rights lawyers, but his firm came under scrutiny after the Al-Swaydi inquiry in 2014. It found that allegations of murder and torture in British custody made by Iraqi detainees after a battle in 2004 had been based on lies and speculation. Some of those making the claims had been represented by Mr. Shiner. A subsequent investigation led to this tribunal. Phil Shiner had already admitted to acting without integrity and acting recklessly. Today, the panel found that in five of the allegations he faced, he had also acted dishonestly.
The government's issued a document setting out how it will approach the Brexit negotiations. The white paper confirms the UK will leave the single market but seek special deals for financial services and car makers. For Labour, Sir Starmer called for a vote in Parliament before a final deal is done.
All honourable members will have to watch on their screens as the European Parliament debates our deal before we get to express any views on it. That is completely unacceptable and it's demeaning of this House.
The Bank of England's increased its forecast for economic growth. It's raised the prediction for 2017 from 1.4 to 2%. It says the economy has been more resilient than expected following the vote to leave the European Union. President Trump has told reporters that nothing is off the table in terms of how the US responds to a ballistic missile test by Iran. Yesterday, his national security adviser said Iran was on notice following the firing. Southern Rail and the train drivers' union ASLEF have reached a deal to settle their long-running dispute about changing the role of guards. The RMT union is not party to the deal and their dispute continues. But Nick Brown, the chief operating officer at the rail company, says he hopes the worst is over.
We're open to talk to the RMT at any time, but the last time that they took strike action, we were able to run over 77% of our trains, and that is the objective that we would have going ahead, to ensure that we provide the best possible service and the best coverage across our network. But the good news that we've got to today is because ASLEF took a courageous step.
Cumbria police have apologised to the owner of a car which was blown up in a controlled explosion hours after their own officers parked it outside a police station for safekeeping. The force blamed an internal communication error for the mix-up. The weather, a mainly cloudy and mild night with rain in the north and west. BBC News at 3 minutes past nine.
Mark Forrest, BBC Surrey.
Always good to have you there. It's excellent to share some time with you. A special celebratory show for you this evening. Now, they say if you want to be really good at anything, then you need to start young. Well, it's true of learning languages, and it's definitely the case for wannabe sports stars of the future. Coming up, the teenager hoping to make it at the Olympics in a discipline included for the very first time. Plus, the blind man and his guide dog hoping to be on the podium at this year's Crufts. Remember, if you want to say hello, text there for you, 81333. Start your message, Mark. You may email mark@bbc.co.uk. Get in touch via Facebook or Twitter. Just look for Mark Forrest Show. And there will be.
Traveling in a fighter combi on a hippie trailhead full of zombies. I met a strange lady. She made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under? Where women go and men wonder. Can't you hear the thunder? You better run, you better take cover.
had a bonus consolation prize for you if you suggested MetaWorks Down Under a little earlier for those people who dug up the Blue Peter time capsule. Ah, good tune. So, one or two more stories that I've gleaned from today's news to share with you, and two more of the team that put the show together with their highlights of the last 4 years. Christian Broderick, hi to you. Good to know that you're listening and have done over much of the last 4 years. Likewise, Jacqueline Bridgman, who's been in touch. Greenbelt Sal Bayek, she says those 4 years have flown. And Carol Ann, listening at the moment too. Mrs. C on Twitter, Wimbledon 2014, that was particularly fabulous. Yeah, I do recall that. I got very wet. We hadn't actually worked out that if it rained, you needed to have a broadcast point that offered a little bit of shelter. We didn't. So when we returned last year, 2 years later, so 2016, we made sure we got a special commentary booth high up in the sky where we could see everything and speak to everybody, but stay dry when the drizzle began, as it did. Right on cue. Now, a 13-year-old girl from Gloucestershire is going up in the world after being offered a place on the GB climbing development team. Anya Farino could represent the country at international competitions and even the Olympics in 3 years' time, which will be the first games to include climbing. Michelle Rumininski's been to meet her in training.
I just love being on the wall and feeling like you're free on the wall because, I mean, when you go outside, it feels like you're in a place where no one's ever been before, and it's just really amazing to be out on the wall and go climbing, and I think it's just a really fun sport to get into.
And so tell me then, what does it mean to make the GB squad?
Oh, it's really cool. I mean, being able to like represent my country, I've always wanted to do it since I first started.
And did you ever think that you would get to this stage where you would be selected to be part of the team? Is it something you've been working on for a long time?
Well, I've always hoped that I would get to this point, but I never dreamt that I would ever be here. When they called me, I was just speechless because I thought, me? Really? But yeah, it was really cool to be in GB team now. I normally go to quite a few centres. I normally have to travel quite a long way for climbing, and really all the coaches are really nice to me because they know how hard I've trained, and it's really nice to have someone to be with you when you're on the wall supporting you.
And do you ever feel kind of scared on the wall? Because some of the things you've done today, I've been scared for you.
Yeah, when you get on, there are some types of walls that you think, wow, if I fall off now, that would not be good. It's a dangerous sport, but I mean, it just gives you that thrill knowing that you're always like in that danger, but it's so fun being on the wall.
Have you ever fallen?
Yeah, quite a few times. I mean, if you look on my leg now, I've got quite a few scrapes. There's always failure in like climbing, especially with falling, you think, oh, I'm not that good. But really, if you can overcome it, then you're definitely becoming a better climber.
And what are you most looking forward to being part of the squad?
I'm going to get so much more advice, which is really going to help me. And I'm really excited for being able to use that. And so when I go outdoors, which I love going outdoors, I can really put it to the test.
And what's your ultimate goal? Would you like to compete at the Olympics, or are you not thinking that far ahead at the moment?
The climbing is really new to the Olympics. So I've got the next two Olympics, next three, I think, that I can really have a go at. But I've never really thought about that. But I think definitely if I'm able to go to the Olympics, that would be amazing. That will completely be my whole goals for climbing. And oh, it would be so cool.
There's a switched on and ambitious 13-year-old. That was Anya Farino talking to Michelle Rumininski. And you're going to hear about another youngster who could be a sporting star of the future after Marvin Gaye. Too busy thinking about my baby. Marvin Gaye, too busy thinking about my baby. Well, I've won a few running races in my time, but yes, part of me that always thought, if I'd started a bit younger, how far could I have gone? I was a real late developer. I'm really, really late. So all the best of the 13-year-old who you heard from a moment or two ago, who's been offered a place climbing for Britain. Should we carry on with the trend of exceptional teens? Yeah, why not? 16-year-old Harry McQuillan from Staffordshire has been signed up to drive for a British racing team. It's after impressing talent scouts with his kart driving, which he started doing when he was 12. Harry and his mum, Claire, are joining us now. Hiya, Harry.
Hello.
And hi, mum, Claire.
Hello, hiya.
Nice to talk to both of you. Harry, how did you get into this?
So I got into racing karts when I was about 12. I went, like, indoor, and then I basically moved on there into a team and moved to outdoor karting and just worked up the ranks throughout karting. Now I found myself here in signing for a young driver program with Team Hard.
Has it been difficult to balance all this with your schoolwork?
Well, this year's going to be pretty tough because I've got GCSEs, but school is pretty good with, like, letting me have authorised leave, so it's been all right.
And Mum Claire, when did you notice that Harry had a talent for this?
I think the first time we went outdoor testing with a team, he was quick off the mark straight away, come off with a big grin on his face. And then his first race weekend, he won his first novice trophy and then went on to win the first five novice races that he competed in. So it was sort of then that we had to take it a little bit more seriously and see how it went.
But as a mother of a 12-year-old when he started, now 16-year-old, doesn't it scare the life out of you?
Oh, yes. Never watch the first lap. I always have a spotter. And then I watch the rest of the race, because first lap's when all the incidents happen, generally. Do get nervous. I think I'm more nervous for him than anything. But, no, I'm looking forward to this season. It should be a bit of a big step up, but it'll be interesting.
Well, it really is. Tell me about the signing with Team Hard. How did that come about? Harry.
Oh, so it came about through... We spoke to Tony at Team Hard, and we got a test day booked to him, which I went out and drove with a British touring car driver, Paul O'Neill, who's a commentator as well, and he went out with him and said, you know, did really well, fed that back to Tony, and now Tony's asked me to drive for his young driver program, and that I wouldn't obviously be driving this season without RCIB insurance. And Tony, Team Hard, so big thanks to them.
And what sort of vehicles, what sort of cars will we be in?
So I'll be driving in the VWs for VW Cup, which will be great.
And what sort of speeds will you be going at?
So roughly around about 140 mile per hour.
And the sensation as a 16-year-old to be doing something like that, I mean, the adrenaline must be bursting out of you.
Yeah, always adrenaline, even when you're in the car, it's only going about 70, but obviously so close to ground. And then when I went out in the car, it was just great, yeah.
And Claire, I mean, motorsport, it's not a cheap sport, this we know. It has to attract huge amounts of sponsorship to survive. I mean, how are you guys able to support Harry?
Well, so far we've been lucky enough, he's been lucky enough that he's been supported by the Bank of Mum and Dad, basically. But obviously stepping up into the racing car arena, really, and working with Tony, he's very keen to work with partners to support Harry through the rest of his racing season. He's looking ideally to have a good season this year within the Volkswagen Cup, get some partners on board that we then can keep through and take him up to Tony's British Touring Car team. So, yeah, it's not easy, I'll be honest. It's not, like you mentioned, it's not the cheapest sport to be in, but it is a fantastic sport for getting a return on your investment with regards to supporting certainly a unique young driver like Harry's going to be this season.
Well, that's good to hear. You've clearly got a lot of support at home, Harry, which every sports would-be sports star of the future needs.
Yeah.
I mean, what are your ambitions? Anybody listening to our chat will think, OK, what, a young guy who's impressed everybody at kart racing? We know that story, don't we? Lewis Hamilton, world champion. Where are you going to go?
Well, I was kind of hoping to go down the routes of touring cars and GT cars, and one of my, like, big dreams is V8 supercars out in Australia.
Well, all the best with that. Are you ready for some long-haul flights, Claire?
Not particularly, but if he does it, then, yeah, it'd be fantastic to follow him in the Bathurst 1000 or something. I don't think we'd turn our nose up at that, to be honest.
Well, who wouldn't? No. Great to talk to you both. Harry, we can only wish you the very best of luck, and you've got great support at home, so you're going to go far. Harry, Claire, lovely to talk to you both. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
There they are, driving sensation Harry McQuillan and his mum, Claire, and when he is a world champion in 5 years' time, just remember you heard him here first.
Surrey. John Oates and Maneater. Hello, Majid Hussein. Just emailed the show. Thanks for 4 years of great programming. It's been great fun, Majid. Thanks for being there. Hi to Georgina and Elaine, who's contacted the show from Plymouth, and Edna in Gosport, and Fran, who's in Ulverston, and Sue in Beeston. Always good to hear from you. 81333 on the text. Start your message, Mark. It's mark at bbc.co.uk. Via social media, Facebook, Twitter, just search Mark Forrest Show. Right, you've been hearing some of the highlights of the show from my Studio Elves this evening, and joining me now is Elsa Rochester. Elsa, hello.
Hi.
Tell me what an average day working on this show entails.
Well, I'm not sure there is such a thing as an average day here, which is probably what makes it so brilliant. What we do is we find the best stories and the best audio and the stuff that we call your cornflake moment when you're eating your breakfast and you just stop and you look at the radio. And it gives us an excuse to play it out again. So we search all that out and we find it. And then we find the guests to talk about it, the best things that when you hear a story of something amazing that somebody's done, the most interesting person to take it on and broaden the topic a little bit, whether that is a fabulous celebrity or an academic or just somebody who's done something amazing.
And I must say, generally, I don't know what on earth is going to happen on the show until these guys ring me up. So Ailsa will ring me about 11 o'clock in the morning and say, stop mucking around with the goats and the sheep and the dog and listen to me. And it's always a revelation. What do you, Ailsa, enjoy most about what we do on the show?
I think I enjoy finding people and ringing them. I mean, a good part of my day is reading interesting stuff on the internet, and who can say they have a job that is better than just reading the internet and going, have you seen this? This is ridiculous. Can we do this? Or having a discussion. We did slippers last night.
Oh, yes. I know it. You went out and bought and made me wear the most appalling pair of granddad blue things that I've ever seen in my life.
Because it turns out there are humans who don't like slippers, which are the best things in the world. So we have this conversation where you go, slippers are awful. I think, what? How do you live, man? What is your... And we have this whole picture of Mark at home, and it turns out he's ironed and pressed and in shoes living his life, which to me is the most bizarre thing in the world. So we get to have these conversations about human beings and what they do every day, and I love it.
The picture, by the way, that she has painted, not necessarily true.
You're in a suit from the moment you get up.
Smoking jacket and cravat. This, the interview that you have chosen, I forget everything. You know, we get to the end of the week and I couldn't tell you what we'd done the day before, never mind on the Monday. This interview, you told me we were going to play it. What? Who? And then you reminded me, it's legendary. Tell me why you liked it.
This is Duckman, and it's become a team joke how much I go on about Duckman. So I can't remember why we did this, but I know that I was out on a Saturday afternoon in a cafe in the Dales and I saw a man sitting down with a duck on his knee. And that duck was on a lead. And I skidded to a halt and turned around and said, is that a duck? Which was the stupidest question I could have asked. And he said, yep. And I said, is it on a lead? And he said, yep. And I said, is it your pet duck? And he said, yep. And I said, can I have your number, please? I'm a journalist. And he bemusedly gave me his card, and it must have sat in my wallet for about 8 months until we did something about weird pets. And I said, oh, I have a man for this, and he's got a duck and he takes it out with him. So we rang him and he came on, and he was a legend. This is Dean and his pet duck, Ranger.
It's just a bog standard common mallard, basically.
And how did you end up with it?
A bit of a random one. We were out at a classic car show, decided to take a bit of a spin on the way back home, ended up in a little place called Malham over in Yorkshire, and walking down to the gorge, heard like this cheeping noise and found these two little ducklings, maybe a day old, stuck down the side of a rock. So sort of took pity on them. They were on their own. There was no mother or anybody else about, so they'd obviously been sort of left there. So we picked them up, put them by the side of the river, and thought nothing more of it. Walked away, and as we were walking back to the car, these people like pointing and sort of smirking and laughing at us and stuff, and we couldn't suss out why at first. And then when we turned around and had a look, these two little ducklings had followed us all the way back to the car.
Of course, because you're mum then, aren't you?
Well, more dad, but...
So what next? What did you decide to do?
Well, we were in a kind of quandary, because where they were was quite near to a main road, and that became evident on the way home when, you know, there was a few of them that had been sort of hit by cars and stuff like this that were obviously dead. So we just made a decision that if we left them there, they'd probably have been eaten by sort of rats and stuff like that, being where they were. So we just sort of made the snap decision that we'd put them in the car and we'd take them home, and then we'd sort of hand-rear them, because there was two of them, with a view to get them healthy and then to release them back into the wild.
Now, things didn't quite go to plan, did they?
No, they didn't at all. They got to a point where, I mean, we were basically told, because they were without mother, basically, that they probably wouldn't last more than a week or two. There were certain things they needed that we obviously couldn't provide for them. But we got them through it, and they got to a certain point where they were starting to get quite large, and, you know, they couldn't be in the house any longer. So we thought, right, let's start getting them ready to go back, go back to the wild. We want to take them back to Malham or whatever. Had them in a big rabbit pen outside. And my partner went down in the morning to sort of say hello to them as we did every morning, and one of them was gone. And further investigation found that one of them had been grabbed by, we assume, a fox.
Oh.
And actually pulled through the pen and obviously dead. So
oh.
The one that was, oh, mate, we were gutted, absolutely gutted. And the one that was left, she was just in absolute shock horror. She was standing in the middle of this pen just screaming and shouting and, you know, quacking at the top of her lungs, absolutely petrified. So we sort of picked her up, took her back into the house, and for the next couple of days kind of calmed her down a little bit, I guess. And I guess she sort of never really moved out.
Well, I can see why you wouldn't have wanted to put her straight back outside again and have her suffer the same fate.
Yeah.
And clearly she sort of decided she rather preferred it inside.
She's about 10 months old now.
And do you have what, a little paddling pool in the kitchen or something? Or do you, it's for her to waddle around
it? It's a funny one. No, she's a funny one. She's a bit fussy. She gets up in the morning, has a shower.
Okay.
If she's having a bit of a fussy day and you turn the shower off before she's ready, she'll sort of tell you off. She'll start quacking at you and whatnot. And then when she's ready, she flaps her wings and makes a noise and you can get her out of the bath. And then she'll kind of have a little wander around until she sort of dries herself off and plucks all her feathers and prunes herself a little bit. And then sort of 10, 20 minutes later, she'll fly up, sit on the sofa and start watching TV.
You're pulling my leg. This is what she does,
no,
for real?
Genuinely, 100% honest. If you say we walk from the living room through to the kitchen, she'll jump off the sofa and she'll follow you through. And if you leave her on her own in a room, she'll start quacking.
Potentially, how long could this duck, does she have a name, by the way?
Yeah, Ranger.
How long is Ranger going to be part of your life?
To be honest, we don't know. We didn't expect her to be around this long. We've heard everything from 2 years to 20 years, and
whoa.
I think it's just down to climate, you know, how... I mean, she went through a really kind of scary time for us where she got a bout of botulism. So we sort of took her down to the vets and we said, you know, what's wrong with her? Because all her neck was floppy. She couldn't stand up. She couldn't walk. And the vet basically sat on a table and said, well, I'm going to put her down. I said, well, why? You know, you can't just take her off of us and kill her. We're not, you know, we wanted her to live, and that's why we looked after her. And they gave her a load of antibiotics and stuff like this, which cost an absolute fortune to do. And they told me that she'd be dead in 48 hours. And we went through this process where, because she couldn't stand up and she couldn't eat properly because she couldn't stand up and she couldn't move around, I was up four times a night running a bath, putting her in the bath and then feeding her in the bath because obviously the water supported her body weight. And after weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks of her slowly getting stronger and stronger and stronger, she sort of pulled out of it.
What an amazing story.
Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind. I'm in love. I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried. I thought love was more or less a given thing. Seems the more I gave, I got. What's the use in trying when all you get is pain? When I needed sunshine, I got rain. Oh, then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind. I'm in love. Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind. I'm in love.
Monkeys and I'm a Believer for you if you're on the road tonight. How are the roads? Yeah, could you just get home in the next half hour? Make the roads nice and clear before I get on them myself. Here's the latest from Adam.
Thanks, Mark. In Surrey, the M3's closed now for overnight roadworks. It's shut in both directions between the M25 at Junction 2 and Camberley at Junction 4. That's till 5:30 in the morning. In Essex at North Stifford, the A13 westbound towards London remains closed after a collision earlier this afternoon. Emergency repairs taking place overnight now, closing the A13 westbound at Stifford Clays Road. And in Kent, the M20 has a lane shut both ways for overnight road works at Junction 3 for the M26. That's till 6 a.m. in the morning. Now, if you spot any other problems, do call in on 0330 123 0184. That's the latest. I'm Adam Moore.
It's Mark at bbc.co.uk. 81333 on the text, starting your message, Mark. Tim has been on. Really good to see the producers and researchers talking tonight. Yeah, isn't it just making them work double hard for their money? Their choices of their favourite bits of this show over the last 4 years. And there's more to come after Big Mountain.
Mark Forrest, BBC Surrey.
Ooh, baby, I love your way. Every day, yeah, yeah. Ooh, baby, I love your way. Every day. See you.
Mountain, and Baby, I Love Your Way. Thank you, Tim, for getting in touch. Tim's in Devon, and he's enjoying what he hears tonight. Likewise, Neil on the email. Good to hear from you as well. mark@bbc.co.uk. Tara just called the show, as did Maria, listening in Nottingham. It's 0345 31858. We've been looking back at memories. First one chosen by me, the piano lessons, and then Richard and Joe and Dan and Elsa. That's the current team. You've heard them all. We heard from John Craven and the amazing astronaut. Memories of Hull right at the beginning of 2017, the year of UK City of Culture. And the crazy duck man. What a super story 5 minutes ago. They are the current team. This is somebody I worked with right at the very start.
Hello, stranger. My name's Kat Harborne, and I was one of the first producers on the show when it first started back in 2013. And do you remember, Mark, in the December before, we started planning the show, and one of the things that I loved was we did a secret show that not many people knew about. It was in the middle of the night, and it was broadcast, and we were able to test out some of the ideas that we had, and so it all felt very real and very exciting, and I can't believe that 4 years has flown past so quickly. I loved working with you and all of the different stories we used to cover from across the length and breadth of the country. And we'd do funny stories, happy stories, sad stories, and really emotional, moving stories as well. One of the favourite things of mine was when we took the show on the road. So we went down to Bristol for the food festival. We went to the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow.
The sun is shining and there are crowds of people here. I'm going to go and take my seat and join them.
It has been a spectacular show and kids are having a great time. Everyone's having a great time. It's amazing for Glasgow.
And do you remember we went to Children in Need? And we got to meet the late, the great Terry Wogan, but we just knocked on his door, pitched up at his Winnebago and asked to be invited in. And he was very gracious and very generous. And you interviewed him. And in the middle, I seem to remember that his crisps were delivered. So that was a really good memory. But maybe I ought not to mention the time I nearly chopped somebody's hand off by dropping a clipboard down a stairwell. And he wasn't just someone, he was the boss of Children in Need. So yes, that was a bit of a tricky moment for us. We also got to go to Wimbledon.
We're at Wimbledon. We're taking you behind the scenes. You've been into the centre court on the television. You've been into court number one on the television. You know what that looks like, but have you ever been backstage before?
That was a very hot day, but it was incredible. And one of the topics that you could pretty much guarantee would unite the nation were the Red Arrows.
Now hold your breath and wait for the ace daredevils of the air, the Red Arrows.
Years ago, the Red Arrows took to the air for their first display season. It was the start of what was to be half a century of crowd-pulling events which showcased the best of British.
I think you got to speak to, was it Red 10? And then they sent us a calendar for the office, which was very exciting. Anyway, I wish you all the best. It was an absolute pleasure to work with you. And here's to the future.
Thank you, Kat. That was a surprise. And I do remember that calendar sent for the office. Lasted half a day. She took it home, didn't you?
What's the sense in sharing this one and only life? Ending up just another lost and lonely wife. You count up the years and they will be filled with tears. Love only breaks up to start over again. You'll get the babies, but you won't have your man. Say I'm gonna leave 100 times a day. It's easier said than done.
soul, the passion, the desolation in that song. Ah, young hearts run free, Candy Staton. Very special show. On tonight's programme, we're celebrating some of the best bits of radio that I've enjoyed, that I hope you've enjoyed over the last four and a bit years. And I've also been giving you a chance to hear the voices of some of the people who've done the really, really hard work putting the show together, making sure that I've got people to talk to and I know what I'm doing on the right day at the right time. The man with an overview of all that is Hussein Husseini. I don't actually know what your job title is, Hussein. What are you?
I suppose I'm the executive producer. That sounds very grand, doesn't it?
Of Y Free Productions, which is the production company that makes the show for the BBC. And Hussein has made sure that there's always a team of producers here to keep me on the straight and narrow. And also the fun bit, because you are a bit like the Wizard of Oz, and we don't really see you that often because you have so many other shows to look after and people to see and all the rest of it. But when we go out on the road, you're always
there. Guess what? When we're out the road going somewhere nice, I turn up.
And we've been to some good places. Which have you enjoyed?
I love our summer OBs. So I suppose the two highlights for me are Wimbledon, which is, you know, just fabulous, isn't it? Because you really get a sense of a place which is just alive with all these tennis players and fans. It's so beautifully manicured. It's like a toy, you know. It's almost like Legoland. It seems so perfect.
And they put us in one of those wonderful booths high in the sky where the commentators would sit for the radio and TV, and you can see everything.
You can see absolutely everything. Yes, yeah. It's a wonderful place. And my other favourite place, which probably other people won't know quite as well because it isn't on the TV as much, Hampton Court Palace, and they have a flower show. And it's right at the height of summer, and it's just beautiful. I'm not really a big gardening person, but when you go there and you see all these people who love their gardening, love their flowers, love all the weird and wonderful equipment and the things you can buy to make your garden amazing, it's quite a special place, really.
And I loved our visits there. I got to mess around on the roof of Hampton Court Palace and got lost in the maze as well. And what always been so good about our outside broadcast is that the introducing acts that I play for you every night, well, we get them to come in.
Yes, and that's what I've chosen as my favourite thing, because there was a lovely, it was quite a young man, Samuel Ford came to see us, and he is, you know, you see people like this, the guitarist, they're kind of, you know, there's lots of blokes with guitars, aren't there? But he was a bit special. He was a very nice chap, and he's a very nice song, as you hear. But he also, the thing was a bit unusual, was that he played in a slightly weird way, because he kind of hit his guitar. And I've never really seen that before, but it worked brilliantly. It was really exciting. So this is Samuel Ford with Ballet.
Take the reins and play to the faults you found on me.
You know what? BBC Introducing has been so integral to this show. I'm very glad he picked that. Samuel Ford performing for us at the RHS Hampton Court Palace Flower Show. A highlight from our programme, picked by our executive producer, Hussein Husseini. The bits and pieces we found to replay for you over the past 3 hours. This is the last time I'll be with you on this show, so before I go, could I say thank you for your company over the past 4 years. It's been an absolute joy for me to be here, listening to so many interesting stories and chatting to you on the air and reading the many hundreds of texts and tweets and emails and Facebook posts that you've sent me. And you know what? Even if you've never been in touch but tuned in at some point over the last few years, stopped to listen, maybe been annoyed or inspired or laughed or cried, then we certainly achieved what we set out to do. So big thank you for being there. It's meant a lot to me, and I'll see you soon somewhere new on the BBC.